round. Huge thanks to Paul Casey, no relation, for this wonderful opportunity. I'm also really honoured to be speaking with Nat O'Reilly, who's a poet I really admire. His work I've published actually in the journals in Australia. To be honest, it's a bit daunting, and I decided to go first because I didn't want to follow Nat again. We were meant to have Ali Whitelock, who's a dear friend of mine and a really talented Scottish-Australian poet. Unfortunately, she couldn't come at the last minute due to illness. So we decided to read a poem each of hers because we really want to share her amazing work with you. So I thought I'd start with a poem from Ali's new book, which is called "And My Heart Crumples Like a Coke Can." Oh, fair and gentle leek. Then there was the okra dish you made, and the neighbours who knocked on your door with their Christmas cheer you wouldn't let in. They brought a batch of cookies they baked and decorated with silver frosting and marzipan Santas. This was the first time you'd met them, though you'd lived next door for years. You returned their Christmas cheer by telling them you suffered panic attacks and might, on occasion, have to knock on their door in the middle of the night. You thought this was being neighbourly. When you closed the door on them, we sat side by side at your too thin table, squashed hard up against the back of your couch as though about to eat a meal on a plane and the guy in front does not have his chair in the upright position. You'd prepared okra, the traditional Egyptian way, boiled with tomatoes and too much lemon. And they are in season now, gracing the shelves of supermarkets the length of this land. And I know it is not their intention to hurt, to remind of what went before, but I cannot look them in the eye anymore, cannot push my trolley down that aisle, cannot bear to see them in all their fuzz and narcissism, laying alongside that fair and gentle leek, her head turned ever so slightly away, pretending her heart has not been broken. And then there is the internet in all its stupidity, who suggests these okra taste of zucchini. But to me, they will always taste of you and slime. We ate shoulder to shoulder at your too thin table in a kind of Egyptian economy class, and you announced with more than a little pride that this was your signature dish, that the acidity of the lemon was key, and I ate on the intermittent silences and citric acid, causing old holes in my gut to open up and scream for me to run. The truth is, you soured those okra with your too much lemon, like you soured everything with your too much you. Fabulous, Ali Whitelock. So I thought I'd start with the poem that kicked off this collection. It's one of a sequence of 15 poems in the book called In Memoriam, and it's a tribute to my beautiful mother, whose death has been the driving force in my return to poetry after many years. In Memoriam to the Draper. The town is dead, nothing but the wind howling down Main Street and a calf bawling outside the Fiddler's. My mother's words, not mine, in a letter kept in a drawer these long years. She had a way with words, my mother. That's why they came, the faithful of her following, leaning into her over the counter for an encouraging word, or the promise of a novena. Long before we had local radio, our town had my mother, harbinger of the death notices and the funeral arrangements, bestower of colloquial wisdom, bearer of news on all things, great and small. Who was home and who hadn't come? Who had got the civil service job and by what bit of pull? The councillor's niece, smug in her new navy suit, oblivious to the circulating countersuit. Would you ever think of coming home? Her words would catch me unawares, lips poised at the edge of a steaming mug, igniting a spitfire of resentment each time, then draping me for days. I'd wear it like a horsehair shirt all the way back, until the sunshine and the hustle had worn it threadbare, this extra bit of baggage in every emigrant's case, their mother's broken heart. I never thought to ask her, would you want me to? So I could look out at the rain circumnavigating the empty street and shiver at the wind whipping in under the door. I don't miss that question now on my annual pilgrimage home. My father never asks it. Like me, I know he feels it. Hanging in the air alongside her absence. I miss my mother and her way with words. So this second poem I've chosen is from a different sequence in the book called Open Letters. And it's to my youngest son, but it's also an ode to motherhood. Open letter 3. Dear Joe, I gave you life. You gave me a crumpled daisy from your clammy fist. I gave you new clothes. You gave me cicada skins and dragonfly wings. I gave you a feast fit for a king. You gave me a scrunched up sweet wrapper and some bits of sticks. I gave you a cozy bed. You gave me sleepless nights and broken dreams. I gave you comfort. You gave me countless nameless worries and my greatest fears. I gave you life, and you gave me the world, freshly sprinkled with fairy dust and smothered in sticky kisses. So, I do a little bit of political work as well, so I thought I'd share with you a couple of political pieces. This one was recently featured as Poem of the Week in Head Stuff, and it was previously published in Apt Journal and on Poetry Magazine. Burnt offerings. Swilling cinders of eucalypt forests burning up and down the coast, tinged with hints of fear. Singed possum hairs lifting into clear blue air. An earthquake in Italy shakes me awake. A mother crying somewhere. Volcanic embers cycling into smoke of broken promises. Women's choices smouldering. Charred remains of exiles' lives. Democracy doused with lies and set on fire. Headless horsemen prancing in the cold. Blackened souls stirring soot from scorched relics. Ashes to ashes, and my mother in a box too small to hold her all, laid in a field with all the others, when she could have flown with the four winds, so I could taste again the sharp tang of her loss, married to the rest. Lately, everything tastes of ash. The next poem is a protest poem, which was recently published in an anthology by Plumwood Mountain in Australia, and it's protesting the building of the world's biggest coal mine, which is proposed for Australia. It would have devastating consequences for the Great Barrier Reef, for central Queensland, and indeed the world. It's a very worrying proposal. About 50 Australian poets are featured in the anthology, and it's available online for free. Everyone donated their work because they believe very strongly in the cause. I urge you to go have a look at it. So my point from that is in the form of a recipe. Recipe for a giant pickle. Take one shovel, a big, big, big shovel. Dig one hole, a big, big black hole. Extract all carbon in the form of coal, approximately 2.3 billion tons. Reserve for later. Into the big, big, big black hole pour all rights of the Wangan, Jagalingu, and Juru indigenous people. Slowly adding 120 billion litres of groundwater, if available. Futures of Carmichael, Thompson, Barku, Diamantina, Flinders, Bulu, and Warrego rivers. Stir well before adding Lake Buchanan, Lake Galilee, Betts Creek, and as many small aquifers of the Galilee and Great Artesian basins as you can get your hands on. Quantities subject to seasonal variation. Slowly slide sand and soil of 75,000 square kilometers of the desert uplands into the big, big, big black hole. Using a sharp-bladed mixer, carefully blend in large quantities and varieties of unique fauna, particularly black-throated finch. Add wallum frogs and sugar gliders for color and sweetness. Now add over 14,000 species of irreplaceable indigenous flora, particularly rare Boronia. The rarer, the better. Tip the remaining ingredients in and cover up 23 laws relating to financial rectitude, several large handfuls of environmental protection statutes, $1 billion of Australian taxpayers' money, 69,000 reef tourism jobs. 10,000 jobs should rise out of the mixture to balance acidity. You can now discard the strongly held opinions of 12 million Australians, as well as Australia's international reputation. While you're waiting, take the 2.3 billion tons of carbon reserved earlier and slowly simmer one small blue planet. Might be time for something a bit lighter. This poem was coincidentally chosen by Nat O'Reilly to appear in an Australian journal called Cordite earlier in the year. I think he described it as my wry and joyful hymn to suburban living. To me, it's a love poem. Nothing happens in the burbs. We lay in bed talking about nothing, till two came stomping up the stairs, raging on about nothing. One hot on his heels. What did you do to him? Nothing. After breakfast, you put music on. Adele, Sam Cooke, Joe Cocker, Emily Sandé. They had nothing in common but us. 11 a.m. on a Saturday, dancing barefoot in the kitchen, pretending there was nothing going on. I lolled between one and two while you did nothing in the garden. Got two's help to move it to the garage. Nothing in the fridge, so we cobbled something together. Nothing on TV, so we watched an expert panel arguing vehemently about nothing the government was doing nothing about while we shook our heads knowing nothing would change. slouching on the couch, nothing between us but the dog, 8 feet in the air, a howl and crash from upstairs. What happened? Nothing! In unison, too quick. What was that all about? Nothing at all. We split a cider, you're straight from the bottle, mine from a champagne flute, making an occasion out of nothing. Till we went to bed, in no hurry, we had nothing on. And there is nothing, absolutely nothing, I would change. Too short. So just two short poems to finish, continuing with the love theme but maybe a slightly different angle on it. This poem is called Christmas Kisses, and I wrote it 2 years ago when I had a bit of insomnia at about 3 a.m. Just after Christmas, and I emailed it to the Irish Times immediately. And when I woke up the next morning, I showed it to my husband and I told him what I had done, and he went, "Oh, you did what?" And within 2 days it was published in the Irish Times, so it wasn't too bad. So here we go. Christmas Kisses. We never had it. It was something you saw in the movies. Old ones rerunning on TV, that handsome couples teasingly kissed under chaste trees in black and white, like the pure white berries of the mistletoe, but perhaps a bit waxen, somewhat wooden. I remember my father laughingly kissing my mother once, under a holly sprig. It seems more apt, so much more like love, with its pricks and bright red shiny beads. Last poem is circling back to where I come from. This is the scene outside my family home in West Clare. And this is where I've asked that my ashes be scattered when the time comes. Come and find me where wailing walls of moss-rolled stone, slowly yielding to a centuried crusade, cling with smoke of long-gone bog fires, now forever married with the drifting sea mist, lifting over impossibly green fields, clutching ancient secrets, drop sharply off to pitching shale, where swarming gulls rise with the lagging tide, running the gusts, plunging with the lulls, to swoop and pull a glistening haul under the flagging watch of a waterlocked tower, marking the ethereal line between sky and sea, and spectral hills loom long past muted islands, still harboring a shipwrecked shore. Come and find me in the dying light, where a cormorant calls unanswered, shallow over his own ghost.